For the last couple of years, I have been a board member for Lantern Hill. It is one of the outreach projects that St. Andrews supports, and from the bottom of my heart, I want to say thank you for your support. I need to thank our outreach team, many of you who are here, because you've been an amazing support to me. I will go into more detail maybe towards the end, but I want to give as much time to Abby Williams. Abby Williams is the director, founder of Lantern Hill. It is June 2019, there was the Mexico 12, 12 of us, a combination of kids and adults I think prior and post, it was a leap of faith on many, many people's hearts. We were supposed to be there. It has flourished into an incredible relationship with this amazing human that I get to call a friend. But we're going to hear it best from Abby, hear her story. So this is going to be her talk on Lantern Hill. There will be time for questions at the end. During church, she will give a greeting after church. I would love to invite all of you to come back for a lunch that has been donated. Without further ado, let me introduce Abby Williams, founder, great friend.
Don't make me cry.
It's just been a joy to have her with my family this weekend.
Even if Eric has two shins now. Thank you so much. Good morning. I'm a little loud, so if you need me to quiet it down, just tell me. Okay, Mom. Thank you all so much for being here. This is very impressive that currently there are this many people at 9 o'clock on an adult Sunday morning in an adult class. Thank you so much for being here. I'm going to tell you what we do, who we are, and a little bit about my story and how I got there. I was actually a Lutheran kid, an ELCA Lutheran kid who grew up in Pennsylvania, very German Lutheran. And so the ELCA really raised me in a way that my mom actually was one of the first women to go to seminary. She didn't become a pastor, but she went to Gettysburg Seminary, and I grew up on the East Coast. And I was always raised to love and love grace, and to really think about justice and the poor. And I don't know if that was just the people around me, my church, my community. It was really about, like, how can we serve and love others and make a difference in the world? My mom often joked that I should have been born in the 60s. I was born in the 70s, but because I was always this kid who wanted to fight for justice. I wanted to make things right. I wanted to help people. And, you know, Jesus talks about that all through the Bible, right? He talks about caring for people and loving people. And there's also this whole sense of justice. How can we make the world a more just place for people who truly suffer all over the world? So when I was 19 years old, with the Lutheran Church, actually, I went to Nicaragua for the first time, and I had never seen true poverty like I had seen. And that transformed my life in such a way that I learned Spanish, I went to college, I started traveling all over, and I knew that I wanted to do something. I knew that I wanted to make a difference in the world. I knew that God was calling me somewhere. I wasn't sure how, I wasn't sure where, but I knew that the first thing I could do was, number one, get educated, get a degree. My parents were very important. Education was very important even growing up. And then I also knew that I needed to learn Spanish. And so at 19 years old, that's what I did. I traveled to South America. I traveled all over. I met a Pennsylvania boy and told him that if he wanted to marry me, that he would have to live in Latin America someday. And he was like, okay. So he went to Nicaragua with me in order to get the girl, but in the process, he also fell in love and his heart was broken for the poor and how we could serve and make our impact in the world. So in 2007, my husband and I lived in California. We moved from the East Coast to California. We started going to Ensenada, Mexico with our synod, with the ELCA synod in California. And a few years, we started kept doing this, and the longer we went, the more we knew that we had to move there. And it was interesting because even my husband was actually the first one to say, we have to live there. We have to move there. And I was like, what? You're the one saying this? You were the one who wasn't even interested in all this. And yet that's how God works, right? He softens people's hearts. God calls us. God calls us places, and sometimes we just know we have to go. So mine was Mexico. We work in an area 3 hours south of San Diego, south of Ensenada, Mexico, in an agricultural area. So if you shop at Trader Joe's, there are literally brands at Trader Joe's, tomatoes, cucumbers, different types of vegetables that are grown right where we are, out south of Ensenada, Mexico. And the people that we work with are people who work in the fields, many or factories. So a lot of the parents pick the adults will work in the fields, and they pick by hand all day long. So they work 10 to 12 hours a day, and I think right now they're making about $100 a week. They work 6 days a week, 10 to 12 hours a day, and they make $100 a week. And those are the working poor. People are working very hard. And yet, when it's time for your child to go to elementary school, middle school, and high school, typically they go to elementary school. You still have to buy a uniform. And as you go through the high school, your high school, you have to start buying books. You have to buy more expensive uniforms. And a uniform typically costs about $100. So an entire week's wage to buy your child a uniform. So what happens is, in this high school, middle school time, children will drop out in order to help their families start working in the fields because more people are working, there's more money, there's more food. So this is what we call the cycle of poverty, right? It's an institutional cycle where if people could get paid more, if there were other options, what would change if there were options? And so we realized after being in Mexico a few years that what is the thing that can change? What is the thing that can actually make long-term change? And that is education. Because if kids could stay in school, finish middle school, finish high school, and then have the opportunity to go to the university, first of all, that was never even an option in this community. It wasn't even a thought. When we first started in this community in around 2011, we would ask the kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? And they would literally sit there and not answer. Because they weren't like little American kids when you're like, I want to be an astronaut. I want to be, a football player. I want to be this. I want to be that. It wasn't a sense of dreaming. Kids just are like, huh? And now, all these years later, what we do is we follow children, we help them stay in school, we help their families, and then if they choose and if they stick to our program, they can not only graduate from high school, but we support them all the way through college. So currently we have our first three graduated a few years ago. They ended up, because of COVID, staying in an extra year and getting their master's. So two of our teachers have master's degrees. Our first child that we actually, his name is Pancho, we asked if he would go back to school. We took him out of the fields at 13 years old and asked him, would you be willing to invest in our program? So he was the first, there was a lot of pressure on him. He made it through, he graduated from college with a law degree, and then also got his master's. His mother is from Oaxaca, a small town, the south of Mexico. The history of their family, no one had ever gone to college. Her mother didn't even speak Spanish. She spoke a native language. So the idea of giving someone an opportunity to change not only their life, but the generations to come, because, of course, if you go to college, your children are more likely to go to college or at least finish high school and or trade school and think about other options. If you want to work in a field, that's fine. What about options, right? So that's what we do. So Lantern Hill is a community center where children go 3 days a week, and we help supplement their education. So school there is only half a day. So they go about 3 hours a day. And so there's not that much they're really good at math. They do really well with math, but there's a lot of things that they just don't get in the public school system. And private schools are very expensive, which would not happen in the area that we're in. So oftentimes, yes, it's illegal for kids to drop out, but it's not really monitored. And so a lot of times children won't even be sent to school, and the community's not calling like, oh, Johnny down the street isn't going to school. It's not like there's someone to call to come get them to go to school. So it's just not, that's just how it is in this area of poverty. So what we do is we stand tall. If you guys want to look at, I have these on every table. Actually, when your church came, this was not built, right? We had been working out of a warehouse, like a huge warehouse with cement floors, and we'd been in there for many years. And we finally had the opportunity to buy a piece of land down the street. And this little yellow building is our education center. So it's our first time that we purchased land. We built the building. The upstairs is now our volunteer center. So it's actually, if you ever come to Mexico, we have a nice bed. We have real beds. We have a bathroom. We've got this beautiful area where we sit and we talk about, we process your experience when you're visiting. And so getting to that point was a dream come true for me, truly. When I moved in 2007, I think I was 30, in my early 30s, and I thought, wow, in my 20s I wanted to change the world. And then in my 30s I realized, wow, changing the world is going to take a long time. So when you invest in, when you want to make a change, it's a long journey, right? It doesn't happen immediately. You have to commit. And the one beautiful thing about having a partner church is that we go that journey together, because I can't do it all on my own. We have a whole staff in Mexico who runs everything. I travel and talk, and I go back and forth to Mexico to with our staff. But ultimately what we do is we have a three-day-a-week program. The kids come either before or after their school session. We help supplement all of their education. We give them extra work. They come 6 weeks every summer. They choose to come 6 weeks every summer, and it's a full education program. Now, we have fun, we play games, we have, sports, we do art. It's a really wonderful program all summer long, but they choose to come, and they have math, and they have science, and it's this incredible experience. So they know that their job is to stay in school, get good grades. They also get 3 hot meals a week at our center. We have 5 teachers that work with them one-on-one. We have a computer center. They have access to the internet and computers because many of them will have assignments on where they have to have a computer and or internet. And if they don't have one at home, they have to go to a internet cafe and pay to use a computer. So this is what we do. We assist in the journey to help kids stay in school, and it's really all of our Mexican staff who does it, and it's an incredible life-changing experience for these kids who, if they're at home, typically they're in single-parent houses. There's a lot of drug use. There's a lot of domestic violence. A lot of them are with either their grandmother or their single mother. And if they're at home, because their parents are working, they're by themselves. So just by having a place where they can come with clean floors and tile floors and bathrooms, and we have games. It's taken us a long time to get from the warehouse version place to this new beautiful building where we have games that they can play. We have Legos, we have educational, we have little motors they can build. And it's taken a lot of people from a lot of different places to create this this beautiful center of light. And that's truly why we call it Lantern Hill, because it's really about us being a light in the community and offering hope and offering a safe, loving place for children to come and grow and be able to dream, to be able to say, what do you want to do? I want to be a doctor. Okay, we're going to make that happen. We have our first student who has literally grown up with from the time she was this big. She is in dentist. She's becoming a dentist. And she was the first child or student to leave Ensenada, and she had to go live in Tijuana to get this education. It was a really big deal because that's not common, right? You stay in your homes. You go to if you go to college, you go local. So we have a lot of momentum right now. We have over 100 students in our program. We have almost 20 kids in high school, and we have 9 in the university. Now, the university does not cost as much as U.S. universities, thank God. However, when we have all of these students, right, that are looking toward that goal, I have to figure out how I'm going to pay for all this. And that's where you guys come in. We need help. We're building a new school across the street. We are still going to use our current building, but we've already outgrown it. And this was completed in 2021. So we are building another huge building with a gigantic gymnasium that will be ours, where the kids can play safely. The streets there are dirt and very bumpy and rocky, and yet the kids still play in the street. They play soccer. So to have a huge gymnasium where they can come and play indoor soccer or basketball or whatever they want to play is a big deal and very exciting. Not to mention we can have large events. And so we are making this big brand new gymnasium, and then we're also making larger, much more true classrooms where they can it's really going to be like our first true school. So that is what we do, and I wanted to give you all time to ask me questions. If you do want pictures and videos, please come up and ask either Shanna and or I. We will help you get them. We'll show you videos. We would love for you to connect. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. And we're looking for relationships. We're looking for people who want to join us in this journey. That doesn't mean you have to go to Mexico. It could. You could come to Mexico for as long as you want. You could come every other year. But really it's about this relationship that we have with your church, because the old model of mission trips, they're fine. They're I think sometimes better for the group that takes the trip. It's really good for students. It's really good for American kids to see the world, to see how the world works. Long term though, the relationship with the church is literally transformative. Not only for your church, but also for the place that you serve. because you receive as much or more than you ever will give. And I believe that's how God calls us to live. And so I invite you to be a part of this journey. And that might mean buying a necklace. That might mean, you know, even $5 makes a huge difference. I don't have the numbers on me, but I can get them. We make 3 meals a week for over 100 students. So the need is there, because children who have empty bellies, right, who aren't well nourished, and who only have a sugar, something, a bag of chips for lunch, it's more difficult to learn in those situations. So our program is nutrition and education. So please, I just would like to open it up to ask questions, you know, any type of question that you might have. How much time did I take? I tried to go as quickly as I can.
20 minutes.
Oh, okay. Not too bad for me. Does anybody have any questions about what we do? Yes, sir.
What's your timeline for the new school? When are you going to break ground, and when would you like to have it finished?
Honestly, we have dug trenches and we're building the foundation, and we don't have a timeline because we don't have the money. But we live on faith, right? So we have one classroom paid for. And on here you'll notice, who did the math? Was it Eric? Someone did the math. No, it was
Gene.
Mark.
Mark, is Mark here? No? Smart. Do you remember the math? Did you remember what you said?
So $1,500 a classroom.
So it's basically $1,500 a classroom. Each cement block is about $2, and the peso changes. The peso changes every day, so this isn't exact. But basically, it's $1,500 to build a classroom, and then of course the gymnasium is going to be a little bit more than that. So we're just starting our capital campaign for that. I would hope in 2 years it would be done.
Buenos dias. I'd like to donate $100 to the new campaign.
Thank you. Thank you. Here, you can take it. So anyway, any other questions? None? Come on. It can be personal questions. Yes.
How many staff do you currently have, and how many staff do you need?
Excellent question. So we have Alma, who is our overall director of the entire school, and her husband, Isaac. They run the program. He does a lot of the computers. He teaches the higher maths. We have a teacher named Ida Sema. We have a teacher named Walfe, a man. It's really important for them to see men a part of their community, because there are very few fathers around. Wolfrey, Isai, and Manuel are our groundskeepers and our construction people, and they run everything. If the water heater goes down, they fill the water tanks. And then we have two kitchen, Rufina and Marcella. And Marcella is actually the lady who makes all the bags over here. She is also from Oaxaca, and she makes those beautiful bags on a loom. They work in the kitchen. And so our staff is, we do need more teachers. But at this point, we're just at the point where we can kind of handle everything. We would like to hire more teachers, but currently, it's a really beautiful place where, oh, and then we also, one of our teachers, not only does she work half the day at our center, but then she goes and she follows one of our children who has autism, and she goes to school with him and is his helper at school. Yes.
In the student population, what's the ratio of young ladies to young men?
Honestly, I don't know. I don't have those numbers, but I would say it's pretty mixed. We do lose a lot of girls in high school to teen pregnancies, and that's one of the other long-term issues we need to figure out how to deal with. Yeah. Anybody else?
Yeah. Teach English as a second language?
Not yet. We focus mostly on their education in Spanish, right? Our goal is to have Isaac, who's the co-director. His mom was an English teacher, and he actually understands a lot of English. One of our goals is to send him to English school so that he can teach it. We are open. If any of you know any English teachers who want to take a sabbatical or spend 6 months to a year or go to Mexico to serve, we are open at all times for volunteers to teach English. And we would love that.
Do they learn it in their regular school?
Not really. I mean, some yes, but it's kind of like, I mean, to be honest, I'm a Spanish speaker, right? I learned here. And the system doesn't necessarily work that well for most kids, even because learning a second language in high school, I mean, how many kids who studied these languages actually retain them? Anybody else? Someone had a question over here? Hi. We are an official nonprofit in Mexico, but because of issues with the government, we've actually been waiting on this special paper for 2 years just to get food donations. And we somehow can't get that one piece of paper from the government. And we've gone back. I mean, it's one of those things. So paperwork takes sometimes years. But we are an official nonprofit, but we do not get any assistance from the Mexican government yet. Anybody else? Aww. I guess the only other thing I would say, do you have a question?
I was going to say, like, we had a group that Chana shared about, you know, in 2019 that went and served for a week. What would it look like if a group were to come now?
Okay, great question. So, first I want to be very clear, and I'm just going to be straight with you. We don't need groups to come. We want you to come and join us and share with us, but we want you to come to learn and to be in relationship with us. We don't want you to come to hammer nails. We don't want you to come to build us something. We want you to come and learn what the community is like. We want you to learn, come and have a relationship with Manuel, like Eric and Manuel, you know, they work together to come up with, you know, what project they wanted to do. We also work with your gifts. So if someone has a specific gift, like say you are an electrician and you want to put electric in our new building, then we actually work with your group to say, this is what we're doing now. We always want you to have fun with the kids. We always want you to just be participate and be with the kids and have fun and play games. Yes, we do building projects. We're building this building. We need labor. We want that. As long as that's not, you know that that's not your first thing. There are plenty of house building ministries that I can introduce people to if that's all they want to do. And there's nothing wrong with that. Houses are great. We want to house people. But ours is a deeper relationship. And so what happens is, you know, depending on what time of year you come, in the summertime, you work with our program, our summer program, which is half the day with the children. You play with them. Is that weaving or crochet? Or is that knitting? So say if someone has a gift like knitting. Maybe she wanted to do a workshop where she taught a bunch of kids to knit. We could arrange that. Because we have conversations before you come and we say, what are your gifts? Maybe there's an artist who wants to redo a classroom and paint a mural. We would love to have that. And maybe you get some of the kids, both the Mexican kids and the American kids, to do it together, right? So it's really about the experiences tailored to you, your group, and your gifts. We do not put you into we're not a cookie cutter place. We pride ourselves on doing things differently. And we've seen some of really difficult, bad things happen when good-intentioned Americans come to Mexico and build something for a group. For example, the Women and Children's Center in not far from us, there was a group that came and did this aquaponics farm. It was like a fish. Do you guys know about the fish? The fish and then the... Well, they built this incredible thing, and then they didn't realize that we lose electricity a lot. All the fish died. All the plants died. Yeah. These are the things that... It was a cool idea, but it just couldn't be maintained. So there are a lot of things that we... That's why we work with the community to say, what is it that you need? What is it you think would help your community? Because we don't always know the right way, right? So that's what we try to be humble, and we try to say, what do we have to learn? What can we, how can we build this relationship together? That doesn't mean that we can't teach each other, right? We did have an electrician from North Dakota come and do the entire electric for this building, and that was amazing, right? If you're... So does that answers your question? Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Thank you.
So we do have relational time with kids, play time, fun time, but then we also have building projects that either affect our property and or the families that we serve. Gary.
To what degree is music part of the curriculum?
Oh, you know, I love music, and it's not necessarily part of the curriculum. However. We have a lot of musical people, and that's something, right now their plates are too full to add that, but we do have, like when we have our parties for our kids, we have music, we sing, but we don't have any classes at this point. Put it on the list. All right. Oh.
Are you affiliated with the local church there?
So we are, technically we are a nonprofit in Mexico, we're a nonprofit in the States. So we're not, you know, church affiliated, although all of our roots are from through the LCA. There is no denominational presence in that area. Our staff goes to an Assembly of God church. And when you are there as a group, we go to that church on a Sunday, especially if you're a church group. So all of our staff are faith-based people, but we're not affiliated with any type of church officially. Back here. Okay. 1 second, Gary.
Yeah, so I was curious with this new building. You said you've got a gymnasium, and perhaps I just missed how many classrooms you're trying to build. And then related on the electrical question, I was just curious. You said you lose power frequently, but you have a three-day-a-week time. So I'm curious, kind of, one, how often you lose power overall, and two, how much of an impact that really is, given that you're a little more south, so you have more daylight hours and that sort of thing.
I would say that aquaponics thing, that was years ago, and I would say that it's definitely better now. I would say that in general, it's fine.
Yeah.
When there's a storm, or, I mean, we do lose power, but...
It's mostly environmental costs at this point, not like, oh... Yeah, your electricity is just going to drop for 2 hours on a Tuesday. And you don't know.
It's not, it used to be like that, but it's not that bad anymore.
That's good.
Yeah. Anyone else? Oh, I'm sorry, I'm walking around so much. I forgot I was being filmed. Okay, well, thank you all so much for your... Okay, sorry, Gary.
How stable is the government? And up here in the north, we hear a lot about... Mexican cartels and
yes.
A lot of bad stuff, people
yes.
Vacationing and getting kidnapped and stuff. How stable is Oaxaca?
Well, we're not in Oaxaca.
Okay.
We're in Ensenada. Oaxaca, so how stable is Ensenada? Ensenada is probably one of the safest places you can go. I drive to Ensenada from San Diego all by myself. Now, I do speak the language. I know how to live there. I've lived there. However, I would say that some of the things you hear on the news media are true, but they want you to be scared, right? So the cartel is in charge of things, okay? That's the reality from Colombia, South America to Mexico. But it's not as scary as once people come and they cross the border and we go and like we have we go to like the abuela's house to the grandma's house to have dinner, you're like, oh, this is fine. The cartel's not really, hasn't really developed our area, so we're sort of out of it because we're on the Baja Peninsula and the drug trafficking goes this way. If you're looking for drugs and or illegal activities in Tijuana, it can be dangerous. But if you stay out of those areas, it's not as scary as people like to think it is. Especially if you're with someone who knows how to navigate everything and speak to people and, you know.
Well, if you're not scared, I won't be scared.
I'll take care of you. I'm not afraid of any of them. Okay.
But a couple things. So to the music and the arts and those kind of things, you know, when we went to Mexico 12 in 2019, and she's talking about the gym and this space. So when we were there and we had six kids and six adults, and there was a place, there's a field where the kids would go, where we'd all go and play games and play soccer. But as the mom and the one in healthcare, you know, I'm looking at all the broken glass and I'm looking at all the shards, the huge shards of broken cement. And I'm the whole time like, be careful, be careful.
Oh my God, they're fine.
But the kids, that's just what they know. But when, as a board, we started talking about buying this additional land and building a school, and, you know, one of the things that Abby said, part of her vision was, and she said, well, building a gymnasium where the kids really, where it's truly safe for the kids to be able to kick a soccer ball and shoot a basketball and be safe. But she also said, and wouldn't it be amazing to have a little stage where these kids can sing and dance and perform? Talk about really getting to dream. And that one has always stuck with me, and I've never said that to you. That, a couple years ago she said that, and then just... these kids, yeah, they don't have instruments to play and to do these things. The soccer ball is really cheap. We took down soccer balls a few years ago, and you would have thought we had just given them $1 million because the balls were actually inflated. So it just speaks to this vision, but anything matters down there. It's that was just such a moving experience for me because a soccer ball mattered. A game matters. Books matter. We got to paint. There's some pictures over there of the library and the kids. I have pictures where the kids are absolutely lined up against the walls and they're reading a book.
In Spanish.
In Spanish, but they were also happy. They had a book. And I was like, wow. It's a different world. It's 3 hours away from one of the most beautiful cities in the United States of America. You drive along. You drive by the wall. It was clearly a life-changing experience for me. It was a life-changing experience for our family. I went because our daughter Jillian wanted to go so much, and they needed another adult. So I went, and here
I sucked her in.
4 years later, got to take the rest of our family down a couple years later. It was amazing. We can't wait to go back. So I want to wrap it up in saying thank you, because that would not have happened for me and for my family without St. Andrews. I do not take this congregation for granted. I do not take your generosity for granted. I do not take our outreach committee for granted. Those of you, there's many of you in the room, and I'm incredibly grateful to you and for you. And thank you for sharing your vision. This morning, really appreciate it. She'll share more. Come back for lunch, please, because we got a lot of food. I overestimate all the time, so please come help us eat. Okay, thank you for giving us your.